What's up, OAUXers? Today, I am going to be sharing a very important conversation, a conversation about language, a conversation about mistakes, a conversation about correcting those mistakes and moving forward. So this is a conversation with Richard Gower, who is the first person to be certified from Cohort 8. He is the Vice President of Computing, Data Science, and Technology at DeLock Engineering Science. He has held leadership roles in information systems and technology for decades. And scrolling back far in his LinkedIn, his first position as a developer for British Rail started the year after I was born in 1984. So that is dating both of us. But I was really excited to talk to Richard because he was such an active participant in Cohort 8. And we've had, usually in most cohorts, we'll have one or two developers, usually people that have gotten into UX are getting into UX from development. So developers out there that want to get into user experience design and are looking for a program that kind of speaks your language, then this is going to be the place for you. You're going to feel very at home here. Most of our the folks in the program are going to be UX designers, product managers, people more on the design side and content side. So I'm always interested to talk to developers because one of the big selling points, if you will, about object-oriented UX and the Orca process is how much it helps you communicate with developers. It not only helps you build more user-centered designs that actually work for how the human brain works. So object-oriented UX is as user-centered as it gets because it's literally playing with this is how the human mind works and let's basically leverage the cognitive science that we know and how the human brain perceives and understands. Let's leverage that and not fight that. So OAUX is all about being user-centered, but it's also all about communicating with our technical partners. And Richard has been, continues to be really, really vocal in the community with lots of ideas. And he has such experience and has really kind of seen it all. So we get into the history of object-oriented programming, the difference between OAUX and OOP, and some of the terminology that I didn't get right, that it's tough to understand what does inheritance actually mean in the OOP world, and how have I been using it a little too broadly in the OAUX world? So we're kind of honing in on what does inheritance actually mean? What are these different types of relationships? What are objects versus instances versus classes, all right? So we're going to get into that too. And I give some of my reasoning on my decisions on why I've used the words that I've used, but we just really go through it. And this is definitely an episode for really anyone more on the dev side, but also for our more advanced OAUXers. So we really do just get into it. I'm going to put some resources in the show notes for you, such as an article on junction objects, an article on tree systems. But we throw those terms around and we try to take a step back and define them as much as possible. But if you haven't been through the OAUX masterclass, this might be a tough one for you. But please, you know, come on in, let it wash over you. I love listening to podcasts sometimes that I only understand about 30% of it because it kind of helps you understand, you know, it's good to know what you don't know, right? So I still encourage you to have a listen. But if this is something that you do want to be able to listen to this and have a better understanding of what the hell we're actually talking about, may I suggest you check out OAUX.com/masterclass to get into the weeds, dive into the depths of complexity wrangling with me. Yeah, take a look at that program. It's 22 hours of video content. We've got templates. We've got extra resources on top of that. We've got a whole community that is just waiting for you. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into the deep end with Richard. Enjoy the conversation. Welcome to the Object-Oriented UX Podcast, a podcast about tackling complexity head-on, gracefully organizing massive amounts of information, and designing scalable, future-proof, and of course, naturally intuitive object-oriented user experiences. An OUXer is a powerful blend of information architect, business analyst, facilitator, and UX strategist. If this sounds like you or what you aspire to, you are so in the right place. I'm Sophia Prater, UX designer, chief evangelist of Object-Oriented UX, and your host. Let's jump into it. Richard Gower, welcome. Welcome to the OUX podcast.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
This started out as us just going to, we were just going to talk. And I was like, you know what? We need to record this conversation because other people are going to be interested in this. So we'll see where it goes. But main things we want to talk about today are OUX, of course, and development and language. We're going to get into some language, maybe some debates. We're going to get into the weeds. It's going to happen.
That'll be interesting.
It'll be interesting. It will be interesting. And I'll just preface this, and I'll probably put this in the intro too, but this is probably going to be more for the advanced OUXers out there. Like if you are new to OUX, I mean, come on in, let it wash over you, but we're going to be throwing all these terms around, and we'll try to do our best to like back up and define terms that we're using. Well, that's a lot of what we're going to be talking about is defining terms.
Yeah, exactly.
But we'll probably be throwing around terms like junction objects and tree systems and things like that. So I'll put a lot more references and resources in the links, but we're really just going to dive into it and nerd out hardcore. So
yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, just fair warning to those people listening. So I want to back up with you, Richard. You said multiple times in cohort 8 during office hours or just in talking, you would just be like, I love objects. Reminds me of the guy from, is that that Anchorman? I think it was Anchorman with Will Smith and the guy that's like, I love lamp. Richard just loves objects. Can you back up? Like, where and when did you fall in love with objects? What's the origin story on your love affair with objects?
Well, okay. So when I started with COBOL and assembler, and the training we went through was structured programming. This was in the 80s. So it was all structured programming. And then late 80s, early 90s, we started doing object-oriented programming. And I actually first started learning with Smalltalk. And
I already have a question.
Okay.
Is structured programming the same thing as procedural programming?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Smalltalk.
But you'd break things down into the kind of functions, and especially COBOL, you used to have call init, call process, call end, kind of then in init, you'd have init process, init end, and break everything down. But with objects, which started making so much more sense to me, you started looking at what were the components in the business, right? And then you gave the responsibilities of what needed to be done to those objects. So what I like about it is you can kind of break down your problem domain. You do, the big key thing, you know this from all the OUX, you're breaking down the complexity of the problem domain into these abstractions that represent your problem. And the abstraction depends on the problem itself. So, the detail of your objects really depend on what you're trying to solve. So if you're trying to solve two different problems, your objects may be similar, but may be very different. So a car object, you might not care about anything within a car if you're just doing car rental. But if you're a mechanic, you'll be worrying more about the engines and the components in the engine and stuff like that. So your objects are very, very different. But then you also go down and an object, and in programming, an object is defined as having both the attributes and the processes, the methods that act on that. So it's all encapsulated into this one thing. So your data and your programming is together. Mm-hmm. And that way, once you've built it, you don't have to worry about it again. it's kind of all over there, and it's like you build that piece, that's it. I don't have to worry about it anymore. I don't care how it works.
Because of that encapsulation, and you can kind of black box
Exactly.
it, and
Exactly.
okay, that piece is done, and then we can just connect to that piece if we need to connect to
Exactly.
it.
And then usually now, and I know we'll talk about some of the difference between OUX and OOP. But then you basically don't expose everything. You only expose certain things through the object, or you can do depending on the language. And that way you can have a lot of private things within the object that nothing has access to. So now you do your processing the way you want to. Now I can change how I do that later on. And no, it won't affect anyone else within, who's using my object if they interact with me through the accepted handshaking, right? So it makes it very, very clean system. So then you can have, one person write one object, one other person write another object. You agree to what the handshaking is, and passing messages backwards and forwards. It's a very clean system. And to me, it just makes sense. You discovered that, but in 2012, 2011, whatever. Like, wait a minute, this looks so much easier. You draw it on a board and you sit there. And I got boards with, all kinds of things, the same like you did. You're doing it from a design point of view. Ours is a design, but then we're taking it and implementing it as those objects. Now, we have a lot more objects, obviously, because you've got a whole load of implementation things to do that it takes into account. But it's the clean distribution of responsibility. No, nothing gets too big and complex. Now, the
Distribution
downside
of
is that some.
responsibility is really interesting. I want to go back to that, but keep going.
Yeah, the difficulty sometimes, this is what I found was really weird with Smalltalk, was finding out which object did the actual work. Because everything's always passing something onto another object saying, you do it, you do it, you do it. And you'd go all the way down, and everything would just go return, 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 return. It's like, who's doing the work? And so there is sometimes it was kind of interesting trying to find out where the work actually got done.
Because you
So
kind
I
of have
don't
to
really.
trace all those relationships to just sort of like figure out, wait, where is this actually coming from? Because this is being passed to this, and this is being passed to that, and that's
Yeah,
being passed to that.
exactly.
Interesting. So you can kind of create a little bit of spaghetti
Oh,
there.
you're just finding out where it gets done exactly. But if it's all working, then you don't have to worry about it that much. So.
So the distribution of responsibility is something really interesting that I know was like revolutionary with object-oriented programming of just what you were talking about without encapsulation. And it's something that I've been thinking about a lot with design teams and how design teams are structured and the siloing of design teams and the stepping on each other's toes of design teams of I can't tell you how many times I hear the frustration from managers and design directors about we're solving this problem and then we go and we find out that another team has been solving a
Result.
very similar problem or the same problem, and how frustrating that can be. Or nobody is solving the problem because of diffusion of responsibility. And I've just thought, I'm like, how amazing would it be to have teams that are a little bit more bifurcated or delineated by objects or groups of objects? And could we design teams like that? Could we have squads of like, okay, you have all the person objects and you have all the product objects, and then when we can basically make a nested object matrix and figure out where
Exactly.
our teams need to collaborate, is that kind of how traditionally you saw development teams being like when the work was divided? Was it like more of an individual contributor? This is what I'm working. This is the object that I'm working on right now, or I'm working on how these two objects work together. Like, how did that team dynamic play out?
I don't think I ever saw that. I mean, the teams are always distributed over around functionality.
Yeah, but not by
I mean,
object.
I've worked on some really, really large companies. I've worked for some small companies. And typically, the developers would work on any part of the application, within their responsibility. So the last company I worked for, we had one application, so everyone was kind of like, they would take ownership of pieces of it. When I worked in the airlines, I mean, you had, huge different amounts of functionality. So some would be on the reservation system, some would be on the flight information system. It's like broken down by that.
Okay. And
So.
then, but the objects could carry across that functionality. So even though it was like functionality, almost functionality was the way that they would
Usually the
use.
systems weren't that integrated. So you would have your own system. Now, there would might be messaging between the systems. This is one of the downsides to object-oriented, is actually having an object in one system talking to an object in another system can be very inefficient. So if you're all in one machine, then talking backwards and forwards is it can be very efficient. But when you start going to like a microservices architecture or whatever, if you have just the objects talking to each other across the network, and they're just like saying, okay, I need to know his name. Oh, here's his name. It's going to be very, very inefficient. So you've got to
Okay.
change your architecture when you go to that kind of scaling.
How do you get around something like
There's a number of different ways of doing
that?
that. That's probably going down a different
Right.
path completely, but
Okay. Well, let's going back to like you're falling in love with objects. You're like you're getting introduced to object-oriented programming. You're seeing the benefits of object-oriented programming. What was like, can you tell me about like the overall developer community vibe at that time? Like what was going on in the community? What were the kind of conversations? Was everybody as excited as you were? Was there pushback to it? Were some people, were there factions? Like you're coming from the wisdom of the 80s and the 90s. I think at this point I was in second grade. So
Oh, you're such a youngster.
what was the energy? Like were there
Well,
arguments that were being had?
right then, Java was just coming out. So, from your perspective, Java's always been around, right? So Java had just started, and I've got volume one, edition ones of the Java specs and things like that when they came out. So everyone was kind of buzzing a little bit about that. but the company I was working with, we were doing, the airline reservation system is. All was all assembler or Sabretooth, which is a PL1 on top of assembler. So most of the people that I was working with weren't getting to take advantage of the modern languages. I was fortunate. I was working with a group that did it was distributed systems development team at Eastern Airlines and System One, and we did some different things. And I mean, one of the things I actually did, I built on top of the assembler language an object-based approach to software development to make my life easy. So everything you did in objects was kind of like object dot method, so you'd say car dot move or whatever. So I kind of built that kind of macro, and it would translate to assembler. And then, so it was easy for me to remember how to code. Instead of writing all this assembler, the things I did often, I would write in this kind of object-based language, and then I could just, it was just so easy to write code. So I was churning out code pretty fast. So the team I was in, they learned small talk, and they were doing C sharp later on and stuff. So they were very much into object-oriented and then the other languages. The rest of the people I was working with, they were working on the mainframe stuff, which didn't have a lot of the OO side to it, so unfortunately.
But was it like when I'm just trying to imagine, like if you could like paint a picture, like imagining this new, completely different way of working coming out on the, and for somebody who's a few years into their career and then this comes out, were there people that were like, this is just a newfangled thing, like this is a trend? Or was everybody just like, oh, wow, of course we're gonna do this?
Well, we found some people couldn't transition. So we had some developers writing in Smalltalk, and their code looked very procedural. Even though, Smalltalk is all object-oriented, but you'd look at the code and you're going, this guy's not going to be able to transition too well. He's not thinking
Not like
object-oriented.
actually leveraging it. Yeah, not thinking that
Exactly.
way.
Exactly. But you see, that time as well was all client-server. So client-server was getting very big. And the company I was working for got dinged because we didn't use client server, which was kind of interesting because we did. But that was also a big focus. So from a programmer point of view, yes, I mean we were following all the object wars. Which methodology do you use? Which diagramming technique did you use? Booch, or like did you draw the diagrams as clouds? Did you use the crow's foot? Did you use all the different. And then, they were fun and interesting, but they weren't really relevant. I mean, they kept you busy, but they weren't really getting to the core of the matter. And then,
So there were more arguments about kind of how we were going to do object oriented, how we were going to start planning our object oriented software, less about whether we should be doing it or not.
oh yeah. I mean, I've got books and things, the training that we had, the internal training that we had that, just got you up to speed and saying, okay, this is how you do OO. And it was just, yeah, you just did it.
Yeah,
I mean,
okay.
I've been used to this. Okay. So when I first did, my degree actually is in geology. And when I was in college, they were suddenly going, continental drift. It's been proven, now everyone, believes continental drift, but right until then, that was kind of like the beginning of where they're saying, okay, no, continental drift is really a thing. So that was kind of, you're kind of like, oh, okay. It's like
Oh,
that must
interesting.
have been.
I did not know that was your background was geology. How cool. Oh my gosh. Do you feel like there's anything that you use from geology?
No.
Nothing? Like,
Nothing.
is there thinking about systems though? Thinking about, I mean, when I think about continental drift, I'm thinking about, how this thing affects this thing, or kind of thinking about how, like, the whole world, we are all this, this, we're this one, this, we use the term ecosystem and
No, geology was about walking around in fields with a
oh, okay.
hammer.
We don't do much of that. We don't really do much of that. I do walk around
Yeah,
in forests with my law firms,
I
but
see you. That's a big hobby of yours, right?
yes, love trailblazing. So the reason I kind of was trying to dig into this is because I feel like designers, I hope what is happening is we are going through that transition or that revolution, if you will, from procedural to object oriented, where we were very like task oriented, which again, like we need, I say that every time I get on the podcast, like verbs are just as important as the nouns, if not more important than the nouns, because people need to get stuff done, but we need to think about those nouns. We need to define those nouns first. So that we can make the verbs more clear, we can make the functionality more clear to our end users. But I do feel like now we're kind of going through, hopefully going through this revolution of very procedural based, very linear thinking, very like, okay, we're trying to get the user through this path or through this journey to thinking more about, no, we're designing a system where we can make very few assumptions about the path that the user is actually going to take. So we need to design a system or an environment and think about the objects and the concepts that are important. So I guess I was interested in like how, what was it like in the early 90s? And it sounds like everybody just kind of got it, which I'm like, how did that happen? How
Well,
did it, like, who was behind this where they just made said, hey, we're gonna, I'm sure that there was a struggle. There was probably a struggle before it became accepted.
I just don't remember it happening where we were working. It's just like we had a couple of really advanced guys that, going, oh, this is what we got to do, and everyone's like, okay.
All right.
So I think you see it with some of the companies that have bought into OUX. They get it, and it's just like, that's what we're gonna do, right? And the others are going, well, and I'm sure there's employees there going, well, I don't know why we're doing it, but they say we do it, so we do it, right?
There probably is
Not
that.
everyone's gonna see the advantage all the time, right?
I mean, I think about the struggle where people were introducing the GUI, the graphic user interface, and there were people like, why would we need that? We have the command line. There was like the command line faction, and then these people were like, but what about this mouse that we could use, and we could get away from the command line? And people were like, ah, that doesn't make any sense. So yeah, it is interesting to me to kind of like get into that history, because I believe that we're making history. We're making history right now, trying to get designers to think,
What I do find interesting as well is like with the talking with the people under the cohort, the fact that there's like their eyes are opening and they're seeing something different, it's kind of invigorating in that sense. Even with yourself, there are days when you suddenly say, oh, look what I found. And some of the things is I'm looking at that going, oh, Oh, I didn't realize they didn't know that, you know, because some of it is like, you know, because it's like a rediscovery in some ways. And it's very invigorating to see that.
Oh yeah, to watch the light bulbs go off and for people to
Yes.
think,
It's like
oh
the
my
discussion on
gosh,
junction
this is
objects and things
totally
like
going to
that.
change the way I work. Yeah, the discussion on junction objects. I mean, my light bulb went off recently. I don't know if you saw my post on like the two different types of junction objects.
Oh yeah, I did. I don't know if you saw my response on that.
I haven't yet. I'm about 4 days behind in the forum with alerts, but
Well, we can discuss that later when we talk about junction ovens.
yeah, we'll probably get into that. But yeah, okay. I would love to. I'll just hear your response right now. Okay, so backing up, can you, what are the main differences between or similarities? Like, how do you see that Venn diagram between object-oriented UX and what we do with the Orca process and object-oriented programming?
Yeah.
Or just development in general, just development in general, really.
Yeah. Well, one of the big differences, as you know, when we refer to an object, we're referring to an instance. And when you're referring to an object, you're referring to a class, which I've got over. You know, I'm fine with that.
But in
It's just.
conversation, though, I want to push back on you because you, when in the beginning, you actually, I heard you say a car object, which is not, would you,
Yeah, an instance.
is that because, but you said a car object, but a car, the car is not the object. The Tesla, 2020 Tesla Model 3 would
Is
be an instance of
yeah,
the car.
an instance of
So
car.
is it because you're on the OUX podcast that you said a car object and otherwise you probably would have said a car class?
I don't know.
Yeah, I
It,
don't mean to do a
strictly, it should be the
gotcha,
car class because.
but like in conversation, we'd use the term object and class. I hear developers use the term object and class interchangeably.
Yeah, but we also use the term object and instance in interchangeably too. So, but that's kind of how, because so from an object-oriented programming concept, it's all these little objects talking together, right? So, and then the class is the cookie cutter.
The class is the cookie cutter, right? So
Yeah.
that terminology is something, and I thought a lot about that in the beginning because this all started with me looking into object-oriented programming and being like, oh wow. But then like the linguist in me, because my mom is a linguist, the linguist in me is like, well, it's not about, we're not designing the instances. The thing that we're designing is the classes, right? So that's where like the design of the cookie cutter, we can't design every single instance. So really what we're oriented around is not instances, but like class-oriented design. Like we don't say class-oriented programming. Like
We
the
don't.
thing that we're really orienting around is what I call the objects. It's the cookie cutters, right? That's what we are orienting our thinking around is these concepts, these cookie cutters and how the cookie cutters, the cookie cutter interactions, right? The cookie cutter relationships that then churn out all those instances for us. So, and then the other thing that's like kind of like an interesting, well, I think it's interesting side note is when I was doing all this, I was in ed tech. So I was, one of my main clients was a company called ClassWorks, and class was a main object. So having a class was like, oh my gosh, I can't do it. So we use, and class comes up, actually, it came up, and another one of my clients was Delta, as many people probably know, working with Nine Labs. And shout out to Jay Cornelius bringing me on with that Delta project, which was so amazing. And they have a concept of class as well, first class, second class. So the term class can be used in so many different ways. And also it has it's also used to talk about like in the same way with Delta, classes and people, the term classist. So like I just, you know, object made so much more sense. So yeah, okay. So continue. Other than that language piece, what are some other differences or
You must hate the English language for its inconsistencies,
oh
right?
man. Well, it's the only language I have, unfortunately. So
I
I'm stuck with it and the inconsistencies. Yeah, it's just, well, it's a fun challenge. Put it that way.
Yeah, so the key thing in development is obviously, like I said, an object is going to have the attributes, the data, and the methods that work on that it can do, and then it exposes the messages that it can receive to act on its data. and respond, right? So which is all very, very similar to the OOUX. And depending on the programming language, you can hide the data or it can all be perfectly exposed. So in the sense with OOUX, we sit there and we identify the objects, we identify the relationships between the objects, you identify the attributes, and then you identify the call to action of what people want to do on the objects. Obviously, what we're looking at is the actions that the objects can be done on themselves, right? So they're very, very similar. They're subtly different, but they're very, very similar. Now, OUX obviously is typically referring to the business objects because we have a whole load of other objects that we have to implement to make things work. And if you have a look at it from a GUI concept, all of the GUI components are typically objects as well. You know, they've got data, they've got actions and events that they react to.
Okay, so even like when I say like what my truism of people aren't coming for the calendar picker, like that they're coming for the event. The event is the object, but the calendar picker is just a UI component. I should say just a UI component. It's the what the user is actually interacting with, but it's a means to the end to find events or create events. But in programming, likely the calendar picker would also be considered
Oh, it could be. Yes.
an
Yeah, it
object
could be.
or a class.
Well, it would be a class of object, but you'd instantiate the object when you're creating the screen or the GUI or something like
Okay, got it. Got it. All
that.
right.
So that's you know, but in some ways the process of identifying the objects and the features about them are very, very similar. You know, it's like that's why it's like the first the whole discovery phase is very similar to what I do when I'm doing, you know, research on an application. You know, you kind of go through, you read the specs, you read the documents, you look at the you know what the user's wanting, and you start breaking out the objects, and just like you do, you know, you start drawing boxes on a I don't I sometimes I use sticky pads and you know start putting things up. I think I've got one over there. There's a you know 60 sticky pads on my whiteboard of something that we're kind of building over there. So a lot of it's very, very similar. But then your focus gets different because we're now looking at, you know, okay, how does it work? You know, what am I going to do? What I liked about the OUX, now it starts putting some of the things that you're identifying are going to be used later on or possibly be used later on in the development process. So, you know, do I have to store the data, or when can I get rid of the data? Those kind of things. Another interesting aspect, which I hadn't really thought about until looking at OUX, was the CTA role matrix. You know, it's like okay, because you do end up having to figure that out. It's like okay, who can see what, who can do what, right? And that's something that we have to think about, but it usually comes on quite a bit later. Whereas, you know, in the OUX process, it's kind of fairly early on.
Oh yeah, we start thinking about permissions
Yes.
real early because it's such a, I mean, I think it's just such a big fail in our industry. I think so many UX issues come up from it not being clear to the end user. Wait, who sees what? How many times do I have to test something in incognito mode to see like who sees this? Or create a test account to be like, how does this actually look for this other type of person? Where
Yeah.
like, I don't know, I shouldn't have to do that. But yeah, we
Yeah.
definitely think about it really early on. Do you see when you think about developer, like so you as a technical person, and you obviously you rocked the course. You said this yourself. You absolutely loved it. You're all in. Do you see what do you think developers, people out there right now writing code, what types of developers would enjoy and find value in the Orca process?
That's an interesting question. I have to be honest, I don't associate with many programmers. I work for such a small company. I just work with my son right now, so we really don't see a lot of people on that sense. So I think, obviously, I think you've got the people that are working with the UX, and you had a question for me at one point. Was I think, do I work with UX people? Do I have people on my team, which we don't? We brought them in especially when we need them to kind of help us do some design, which is why I was looking at OUX to help me and maybe help me communicate with them. So kind of taking OUX and reversing it from the way that you see it. So here's my challenge to you. Instead of it being a tool for OUXers or UXers to communicate to devs, what if it was me as a dev building out some of this so I could communicate with UXers, right?
Exactly.
Flip it around. Because then if we're both talking the same language, I'm used to doing these object models and things like that. Being able to put it in the hands of a UXer that can then sit there and take it to the next step and say, ah, good, now we can do that. We've already got the communication, the understanding. We could facilitate it.
And I never want to put a UX designer out of a job, but in some areas, it's just not feasible to have a UX designer on the team, right? So if you are a startup with a bunch of engineers, basically, and you have not brought on UX yet, which you should,
Oh,
but if you
absolutely.
can't
Yeah.
bring on UX, get one of your designy oriented system thinky engineers, software developers, into learning the Orca process, because that can maybe fill that gap a little bit and then make it even easier. Hopefully, when you do bring on a UX designer, then they could be an OUXer too, and you have like this nice match made in heaven.
Exactly. Then you got that, like you're saying, part of the OUX is to get that common language so that you're talking the same language as the customer, but you're also talking the same language as the developer. They're all talking and you're defining your terms and getting it clear. And I totally agree with that, because I've gone in the same as you have, and sat in meetings and saying, wait a minute, you keep saying the same word, but you're saying using them differently. Can we redefine them so that we all know what you're talking about? Sometimes it takes an outside person to be able to get that.
I also, so something that I was just thinking about last night, because we were watching the latest Fast and the Furious movie, Fast X. And for those that watch the Fast and the Furious movies, you know that Dom talks about family a lot, talks about family, and he talks about legacy. And I was thinking about legacy, and I was thinking about legacy software. And what I thought, oh, I realized when we talk about legacy, when it comes to family and our life, we talk about it like it's a good thing, right? We talk about like leaving our legacy. When do we ever talk about legacy
Legacy
software like it's a good
software.
thing? Never, never. And why is that? Why is legacy software always, it's always a baggage, right? It's always baggage. It's always between a rock and a hard place. It's always something that we have to like maneuver around. And it's just like, oh, we can't do that because we're the victim of this legacy software. Instead of the legacy software having created these really nice foundational building blocks. And yes, stuff breaks down. And yes, stuff needs to be maintained and the software updates and everything. But if you have really great foundation of legacy objects, if you will, that are connected in a really nice way, and then you need to add something and you need to build on top of it, then could it be like, oh, damn, our legacy software is awesome and it's helping us actually move faster? Like, is that, and I'll elaborate a little bit here with what I'm recognizing with Notion. So Notion is where myself and my colleague Marisa, like we build software basically to run our business within Notion, right? We're building relational databases. And in the very beginning, when I transitioned over from Trello to Notion, I object mapped that. I created, I sat down and I was like, okay, we've got projects, we've got tasks, we've got people, we've got, and those were the main things that we started off with. Projects, tasks, people. And then we had things like content ideas. We had standard operating procedures started growing into it. And then most recently with cohort eight, we created this board so that we could manage the mentor pods. So the mentors to empower the mentors as much as possible. So then we all of a sudden had mentor pods. We had assignments, and now we had assignments as well with the concierge. And we created these basically the building blocks of our business. And now we're starting to add additional stuff. We're starting to really build out our customer relationship management, our CRM through Notion. And we're adding things like, for example, we added, that's like a simple example. Usually we'll take quotes. We'll probably take quotes from this podcast. So this podcast episode will turn into a resource, which will then get connected to assignments potentially as a resource that will show up on an assignment to say, hey, here's the assignment. And hey, here, listen a little bit more about, Richard and Sophia talking about development. And so it'll connect there. And then we just introduced a new object of quote. So we're going to start because it was just all in a Google Doc. It's just a big Google Doc of podcast quotes. So we're like, no, let's put this in a database. We could start reusing these really amazing quotes and testimonials. Okay, we already have people. So who said it gets connected. And now I can see a person and I can see all the quotes. We already have that. We already have the resource object to connect it to. What resource did this quote come from? We already have projects that this quote can be funneled in. We have customer personas. Which customer persona within the OUX world needs to hear this quote? So I had this realization that we've created really nice legacy software within Notion, where actually building new stuff becomes easier.
Yeah, it's because you've started it with a growth in mind, right? So
Right.
you simplified, you started simple, and you're allowing the expansion on it.
Yeah, I wanted to create, and I don't even know if I was thinking about that at the time. I was just like, well, I'm going to OUX this thing. So I just made sure like people and tasks and projects were really well connected. The data was really nicely there. And then every time we added a new thing, we're like, oh, well, we can go ahead and connect it. I don't need to create a new person object. I can just expand this existing personal
Exactly.
object that we already have, maybe add a new view, which is basically conditional logic in Notion. Like, okay, this view, we only need these attributes because I'm looking at podcast guests, right? Like, I don't need to create a new database for podcast guests because I already have the person database. And then I can just say, what's the status of that person? Is that podcast guest a cohortian? Are they from the self-paced masterclass? Are they just an advocate? I can even connect it to a customer persona. So I can see for this customer persona, here's all our podcast guests. And it's just this really beautiful thing that is like, I'm realizing this is helping us scale so much and actually helping us grow faster because we built a good legacy system. And I just think about like, could OUX and the Orca process help developers and UX designers create a stronger legacy, create good legacy software so that when they leave a company, they're leaving it sort of in a good place for the next
In a
person to
good
come
place
along
where
and
other
build
people can
upon.
come in and expand it properly. The danger always is when people come in and don't fully understand how to expand it, then they kind of find ways to expand it that counterintuitive and can break that expansion. So, for instance, if you had someone else working on your system and someone said, "Wait a minute, the people object doesn't do that. I'll create another people object that does it," now that would start, So it's a matter of having that vision and being able to sustain that vision too.
Yes, and to be able
And
to
purity.
show it at a high level. So having that object map too, so it's not just the implementation of it with all the databases. That's the software that I want to create. Maybe we'll create together. We've talked about it, of like, can I take the data, this relational database, and visualize it as an object map and use that for onboarding new people? So people coming in, that's what I hear all the time. I've heard that on the like past three episodes of the podcast, people talk about, oh, this is really great for onboarding. So you can start understanding a thing and seeing that bird's eye view.
And sometimes you'll see that people are forced because of timelines. It's like, oh, we got to get something done quickly. So now you can't go back and make the changes in the right places, so people tack it on the side, right? You know, just because it's like, well, we have to have it done by next month,
Yes.
so this is quicker.
But
And
when you have that good legacy software, good legacy software, using the legacy should be faster, right?
It
If
can
the
be.
documentation is in place and you can leverage what's already there versus creating a new thing and creating technical debt and UX debt.
Yeah, it can be, unless you got new developers that are having to go in and do the research and find out where everything is, and it's like,
But you
you just
have the object map. You're what
you
Richard,
do.
we gotta think
Yeah.
about that. We're thinking about idealized version.
Oh,
This is not
idealize, yes, absolutely.
idealized. You have it, you have a big ass object map as a poster in your headquarters, and it's like, here's where all of our stuff is, here's what's existing. Oh, I need to add on to this. I'm gonna go ahead and leverage this person object, or I have a really good reason to create another person object, and then they're gonna talk to each other or something like that.
Now, the difficulty does become when the person object is being used, let's say within an organization. Person object, in HR is very different to a person object, maybe to the doctor, right, in the
Right.
hospital.
Yeah.
And it's like, is it the same object? Well, conceptually, yes. Or are they, do you link two objects, one which is more the, oh, this is their home address, and this is the people, and this is the, oh, this is the body that we do medical stuff on, right? Do you separate that? Because otherwise, and you can see, when you've got hundreds of objects, finding the right object sometimes can be very hard. I mean, we found that we had, in a small system, we had 180 tables, and
Yeah.
sometimes, you draw, you put it out, you print it out on, 40, 50 sheets of paper, and you put it on the wall, and you're trying to find out where things go and what's tied to each other. But it is complex. But you're
I
right,
think
having a tool that does.
our Orca software is going to help solve for that.
I
You'll
think
just be able
so.
to search
It
for
would.
it and group objects, so group similar objects are grouped together. I think that there's solutions there for that.
Exactly. Have you ever seen Obsidian, the note taking software?
Yes,
Oh,
yes.
okay. So
Now,
I have the
yeah.
whole Orca course. Your course is all in notes in Obsidian, because I take notes in Obsidian. But
Okay.
you've got that one, the map that shows the relationship between notes. That would be so cool, having that kind of diagram with your objects, right?
And being able to, yeah, to see that node-based diagram, and then say like, okay, just for these objects, like just for these 12 objects of our 200 objects, like just show me the node diagram, the system model for those. Now show it to me for everything. Now let's actually just do it for these 12 plus this one. Okay, so these objects, and now flip and show me as a nested object matrix, because more and more people are saying the nested object matrix is actually a really great way to work. It's great to see it, but when you're in that system model, but then when you're working through it, the nested object matrix can show you those gaps. So you can
Exactly.
see it, like, show me as a nested object matrix, and you could say, oh, well, we really need to think about how these two objects connect, because
Do they
there's
have a
no.
relationship, or do they work together? Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, exciting stuff. Okay, let's talk about language, because we haven't gotten there yet. Okay,
Okay.
we did talk about classes and objects and instances. Let's talk about inheritance.
Yes.
So I have been using, wrong is maybe a strong word, but I've been using it to encompass basically what you're calling class-based inheritance and instance-based inheritance.
Yeah,
So can you explain the difference between these two types of?
there's really not an instance-based inheritance. I mean,
Okay.
I just kind of look it
Except
up,
in
but
OUX.
So inheritance in object-oriented programming, you're basically inheriting the structure and the methods, the functions of a class. So it's done at class time. So if I have a vehicle class, and then I have a car class that inherits from vehicle, it will inherit all of the attributes of the vehicle
Right.
and all of the functions that the vehicle class. So if vehicle has speed and it has an action called move, the car will inherit those, right? And then in car we might have, oh, the color of the car. Or number of wheels, it has four, and then maybe bike has two wheels, right?
But you would still, let me back up though, because okay, and so just to translate this to OUX, this is what we call an OUX, our object bases and our derived objects, right?
Exactly.
So the object base is never instantiated. You would never, usually not, I
Usually
say
not.
never, but like there's no such thing as just a vehicle. Like your vehicle has to be a car or a truck or a train, right? It has to be a type of vehicle. You don't just have a vehicle, right? That
Yeah.
doesn't exist. It's like the meta, I was trying to search for a metaphor and I was almost thinking like I like to think of an object base as a starter kit to actually create real what I call real objects, these derived objects. And so if we think about go back to that cookie cutter method, it's like the object base is not quite a cookie cutter yet. It's just pieces of the cookie cutter that don't actually contiguously make a cookie. You can't make a cookie out of the this like set of the starter kit of pieces of a cookie cutter.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. You said that sometimes in programming you can instantiate
Well, it
a
depends if
base.
it makes sense, because I actually saw an example yesterday, or actually this morning, I was reading something. And they were because they were using inheritance, and I really don't like to use inheritance too much. A lot of people don't like inherit. In some ways, it solves some problems, but it can cause problems. Some languages don't support it. And then, do you have multiple inheritance? Multiple inheritance causes you all kinds of problems. Because
Right.
if I have the same method on two objects and I send that object the method, which one of the two am I using, right?
Yeah.
So it can get very, very complicated in that sense.
And even in design, you know, like I think with, and I always caveat, like just because we're creating in our object map and object base and derived objects, your developers are going to figure it out. Like they're not necessarily going to be
Yeah.
coding it that way, but from a design documentation perspective, it can be a real time saver.
Yeah, but I
But it's
found, because I did
dangerous
that,
though.
I did that with TransitTrue, and the downside that I found was when I got to the later phases, because it was a separate table in Airtable, that I would be looking at my location, and I had to keep jumping up. Obviously, if the tool did it better, then I included all the attributes, then they'd all be there next to it. But I was only seeing the attributes were on the immediate on the location, but not on the thing it was inheriting from. Go back here. Here's an example. Let's say I had a salaried staff object. So I had staff, and then I had salaried staff, and I had contract staff. And then maybe I had, under salaried staff, maybe I had salaried with overtime, and I wanted to inherit. And by inheriting from that person, I can overwrite how the pay or calculate pay method works for the person with overtime than the person without overtime. Now, in that instance, both of those, a salaried staff and a salaried staff with overtime, could in theory be instantiated, right? It may be a little contrived, but it could be instantiated. So,
But you would never instantiate that top level super class, right?
probably not. Yeah.
No, because you have to like, and so that's what like I like this idea of a starter kit. Like it's not a thing yet. It's not a thing yet. It's
Yeah.
just it's this efficiency play. The other thing that ends up dangerous, even in and you know, you have to like use it very discerningly because of those later phases, what you were talking about with prioritization and also requirements. So you want if you have a if you've moved attributes over into an object base, the requirements should be the same for all of the derived objects, right? So like even if all like let's say with going back to our vehicle car, let's say vehicle car truck train, okay, or so we got vehicle as our object base and then we've got car truck and train and all the stuff that has things in common, right, would be on that vehicle, right? So let's say we did something like body style, all right. So we can say, well, each of those have body style, right? Trains have body style and cars have body style and trucks have body style. Okay. But the values are going to be different, The options are going to be different for car, truck, and train. I don't know the body styles of train, but like, oh, bullet train or choo-choo train, you know? So even like, I wouldn't actually put body style from a design perspective, a design documentation perspective. I wouldn't put body style on the object base. I would have three body styles
Because the
attributes.
values are different for the
Because the
different objects.
values are different, the you know the even some requirements around it. It could be required on car and truck, but not required on train or something like that. So, you know, just as an example.
Exactly.
Okay, so with the object bases, we are with a true that is true inheritance, right? What we're talking about now.
Yes, and I would just give you one big advantage of this inheritance. And I think you almost saw it when you were kind of doing the transit element in Transit Trooper. So I had a transit element was my base, and then I had location and line, right? And you ended up with one object for all of those, and you were going to do conditional logic. What's kind of neat is the thing called polymorphism. It means that you can send have a single message that's sent to objects that are derived from a or inherit from another class, and they can react completely differently. So in the sense of if I had display yourself on a map command to a location, it would know to put a dot on the map. But now a line, when you send that very same message to that object, it would know, oh, what I need to do is send the message to all of the line, all the locations that I am associated with, tell them to display themselves, and then I'll link them up together. So, it's like I could have this method at the top saying, yeah, I show myself on a map, and each one of them has its own implementation of that. And then it doesn't matter. I don't care. I don't have to go, are you a line or are you a location? I don't care. I don't have to have conditional logic in that sense, because that conditional logic is handled by the object itself, knowing what it is and doing the right thing when it's told to do it. A
So
little complex.
in that example that I just gave about the body style attribute, likely a drop down or something like that. So even though I wouldn't in design, because I want to write my requirements different, I want to put values on there different, that might still be a developer might still decide to put body style on the object base and then use polymorphism to say, here's how you're going to change the values based on
Could
which
possibly do
derived
that.
object. Okay.
Could
So
possibly do something like that.
this kind of comes to this idea of like what happens in the object map doesn't is not going to be a direct translation to the database design.
Oh, absolutely. And there are times when you've got to play games to make it work, right? And especially when you get to junction objects and things, it's like, oh, do I need to put it, do I need another table to do it or not, right? Can
And
I
that
make
should be
it?
like, I think that should just be really like for those that are running OAUX workshops and Orca sprints, like just to know, I always say bring your developers in, like have them in those workshops. Richard is nodding his head. Like, we like that is a great way to get developers involved early, but it's just if you do any framing to make sure that it's clear that how we are documenting this from a design perspective and from a user-facing perspective is going to give you a whole lot of inspiration on how you're going to actually build the thing, but it's not going to be this one-to-one. We are not dictating the how, right?
Yeah, I think that's very important as well, because you don't even know what the database structure is going to be, and then the implementation, because is it going to be a relational table? Are you going to use one of the NoSQL databases? They're all slightly different. And you can just use a JSON structure just to store the entire object. So it's all a matter of being able to understand it so that we can implement it as efficiently as possible.
Right. We're just taking that kind of first step of mapping it out from that user's perspective. Like, this is what a user needs to see. And so again, like going back to your point at the beginning, like there's going to be a lot more objects too. Like I often do say that when I have a developer in the room, like we're just mapping, we're just concerned with the objects the user thinks about, the user interacts with. You're going to have so many more objects. I recognize that. And I also recognize if I'm doing something fancy, like, you know, I have a many to many relationship, you know, you might need to have another table for that. Just because I don't create a junction object, I'm creating a junction object sometimes when I have other user-facing attributes on that relationship. That's when I'll create the junction object. You're probably going to need more of those. I am not like, that's like, I'm not trying to step on any toes or actually determine the technical architecture when I'm creating an object map. Why are, let's go into tree systems. So recently wrote an article on tree systems and I was very careful not to use the term inheritance. I called it a hierarchy pattern, which I like. I think a hierarchy pattern is fine. But why I'm still like, I get the reason, let me try to explain the reason why tree systems are not true inheritance. And you tell me if I'm right or wrong.
Okay.
So the example I gave in the article, which I will link in the show notes, it is a doozy of an article. It's a tough article to get through, but worth it. So the example I give is movie. So we have a movie, right? The Little Mermaid, the new Little Mermaid 2023. So we've got a movie. That's an instance of it. So we got a movie. And then we have a movie at a theater. Okay. Once you get to the movie at a theater, all of a sudden that we can pull location down probably from the theater object, right? So we're getting into a little bit of a junction object here between movie and theater. So we've got the Little Mermaid, we've got Mountain Cinemas, and then we've got the Little Mermaid at Mountain Cinemas. And that junction object is what is then going to hold showtimes, right? Showtimes are going to be underneath our movie at a theater object. And we get this nice tree system with a junction object in there. So we've got this nice tree system of a movie to a movie at a theater, a little bit more specific, to even more specific of a showtime object. The reason that that is not inheritance, even though it really feels like inheritance to me, even though this is not inheritance in the way that we talk about it with object-oriented programming, is because the values are being pulled down too, not just the attribute structure, the actual values within the attribute. So if I've got a movie and it has at that high level, or I should say low level, if I'm thinking of a tree system, that root, right? I've got the runtime, right? This is a 2-hour and 15-minute movie. All right. I'm going to pull that over onto the, it's going to actually pull because a movie at a theater has one parent movie. So it can pull runtime. And then it'll even pull down, maybe if I'm looking at a showtime detail page, I might see runtime there as well. But it is actually, the runtime does not live on the show, the actual 2 hours and 15 minutes, right? Does not live on the showtime object. It lives all the way over up on the movie object.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you're doing, you know, having that relationship between objects, you basically got a pointer, I'll use the word pointer, to the object that you've got the relationship with. And once you've got that pointer, you've got access to all of the data that that object has. And then also you can call all the methods and the functions and things. Mm-hmm. So
that's the nested object, right? The nested object is that pointer.
Yes.
Okay.
And depending on how it's implemented, you know, either the nested can point to its parent. You could have the parent pointing down to the nested too, depending on how you you implement it. But you know, usually your parent will have a pointer to the nested object. The thing is, when you need to have pointers from all of the nested to the one up here, actually it's the nested object that will usually have the pointer to the parent, because you can't have many pointers. That's where you'd need the junction object, as you did in your example, when you get your Excel spreadsheet and you put, here's my keys, my key of my parent, my key of my child, and then, you know, this kind of keeps that list, right?
Right, yeah.
So as long as you can do that nesting and go down, you can get all of the info. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of languages, allow, once you've got the relationship one way, they hide it from you, but they can get allow you to do it. So in Python, when you're doing, they have a ORM, and we're using Django, they have an ORM, an object relational mapping, and they provide you some of those facilities to be able to easily go, okay, I'm going to have a relationship that my movie has all these show times, and then it allows you to go one way or the other, depending on how you want to kind of look at it. So it kind of builds in and gives you some tools to kind of let you to do it. But yeah, it's you're basically just linking objects together. So you're kind of doing, an aggregation or a composition, which again, that comes to terminology.
I know. And like for me, it's like it's a little bit more than just linking objects together. Like there's linking objects together, and then there's that like the tree system, that general to specific, right? Which definitely feels like the word that I want to use from a
It's
language
inheritance.
perspective is inheritance, right? Like it's going, or even like when we get into, so like what is there a word for that instance based inheritance, which is different than just relationships. It's different than me saying like, oh, a resource has many tasks, and a task, ladders, it can create 0 to 1 resources out of it. Like that's how our notion works, right? That's just association. They're associated to each other, right? There's nothing fancy about it. One isn't an aggregate of the other one. One is not a parent of the other one. There's no dependency between these. There's just an association there. That's just linking those two things. But then when I talk about, when I talk about the movie and the movie at the theater, and then the other example that my very first tree system, I think my very first tree system was within EdTech, where we had lesson. And then we had a lesson for a class, which all of a sudden you get due date. And then we had the lesson for the student, which has all the answers to it. Like that is something different. That is something different, which feels like inheritance.
But that's just not how inheritance is used. And I agree. I mean, because we actually right on my son's whiteboard over there's that kind of same pattern where we were kind of doing actually it was visualizations and data sources and doing graphs and stuff like that. And we've kind of got that same pattern, and we really don't have or not that I know of, that we have a terminology for it. But it does come in, and I think you saw that with the exercise example that people were doing in class, where you suddenly had, oh, my lunges, right? On this
Yeah,
day, my
the
results
RoboCoach, yes, the
on the robo
exercise
coach.
app, yeah.
And you'll often find that that date becomes key on that hierarchy, right? It's like I want to track my results each day or when I do them, right? And I think that's, and
And just
that
to like just to back up for those listening, like we basically had this exer this challenge where there was a concept, it was an exercise app, and there was a concept of like an exercise template and then an exercise that a person actually does. So you have, and that's getting into the two different types of junction objects.
Yeah, exactly.
So, which is like, is there a word for that? Like there's, so we basically, we have Sophia, we have the concept of lunges, which has all the safety information in the main video. And then there's like the lunges that I did on a certain day, the lunges I did yesterday, where I did 3 sets of 20 with 15-pound weights, and the lunges that I'm doing tomorrow, which is 4 sets of 20 with 15-pound weights. And maybe I will have a perceived level of difficulty that's a little bit higher, right? And then I can, and that's where I can see Sophie, and then I can see Sophia, I can see lunges specifically for Sophia, and I can see my progress there. And that
Exactly.
like was really tough for people to wrap their head around that.
Well, what's interesting, and that's where I'd be interesting to see what you read the comments I put on your article, because that's where you went into this. So with the junction object, you're taking that many-to-many relation. Typically, it's a many-to-many relationship, and you're trying to simplify it by putting a junction object in, and you have two one-to-many relationship. Now, what you're happening to do is then, and you're saying you have one instance of that, but now in this case, you've got a multi-instance based on date. And what you're effectively doing, and I, like, what I ask you, challenge you to look at, because this might help clarify things as well, because then it may take you down a whole nother path on models and patterns, is look at it that you now got a three-way relationship. Treat date as another object. Okay? So now if you take the date, take the other two objects, put them in a three-way relationship, and that now gives you your many instances. So if you now had four, okay,
What's
you
workout? Workout would be the date. So you have a workout object, right? And so what you're saying is now that I've got, because I would only, now I could potentially do lunges twice in a workout though. So
Yes. So now you add another dimension to
yeah,
it.
adding another dimension to it.
So, thinking in your Excel spreadsheet, you got your primary two, your two keys that you're one to many, right? And now you're adding another primary key in there, right? Which would be date.
So to back up, what we're talking about here is with junction objects being able to have a single instance junction object and the multi-instance junction object. So the say like in the junction object article, which I will link in the notes, is I give the example of ingredient and recipe. And so when you take ingredient, you take ing and then you need to have amount data. So amount data, two tablespoons does not belong on the ingredient because it depends on which recipe, and two tablespoons does not belong on the recipe because it depends on which ingredient. So you create this junction object for ingredient within a recipe, which for every instance for beef with broccoli and ginger, you're only going to have the one
One
instance
bag.
of ginger within beef and broccoli, right? You have the one instance versus this other example of you have an exercise type or template, and then you have a person, and then you have Sophia's lunges as the instance. You've got lunges, you got Sophia's lunges, and then you want multiple instances to be able to show progress. What you're
Exactly.
saying is actually, I'm introducing another object every single time I have an instance, which would be that date or workout object.
Effectively, you've now got a three-way relationship between those three. And I'm just saying, put date as an object, because if you replaced, if you took that same model, forget about date, and you wanted to bring in some other object, I've got now got a three-way. Now I'd have multiple instances, wouldn't I? Right? So in your Excel spreadsheet, I'd have three keys and then all of the data, right? So now I could, now there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to have four keys, five keys, six keys, depending on, how complex that relationship gets. So I just wanted you to kind of look at it from that perspective and saying, oh, where does this take us? Right. So.
Is though, because with date, there's other attributes that change. It's not just the date. Reps would change. The weight that I use would change. The
Yeah, but
perceived level
they're
of
not the key
difficulty would
values. They're the
change.
attributes on that. It's almost like you're saving attributes on a relationship, right? But the
Yeah,
date is the key thing.
I want to sketch that out, so I want to model that right
Yeah,
now.
because there are some, I mean, there are some pro, when we did BI, some, I did a lot on data warehousing and stuff, and we would have a date table. So date was effectively an object. I'm not
It's
averse to seeing an updated object.
for all those in cohort 8 who did RoboCoach, and I was like, get rid of the workout object. You can eliminate the workout object. They're being vindicated right now to keep the workout object because that's the date. I said, oh, just downgrade it. But this is another thing of like,
Which
well,
you can, right? You
yeah.
can
And
downgrade things.
yeah. And then again, like, how do I model it in the object map? I think how I modeled it in the object map is fine. And to have this idea of like, okay, this is just a multi-instance. And I just need to, but like, how, yeah, like thinking about how that affects the design patterns is a totally different question. I want to, do we have time? We're already like over. Do we have time to talk about local objects?
Sure.
Okay. So a local object. So I'm quoting you here. The local
Yeah,
object is the equivalent to composition in OOP. It only exists within the context of the parent and represents a has a relationship. Okay, so local objects, I want to differentiate those between container objects, which a container object, that's definitely a composition, right? So a container, object being something like a playlist. Even the workout is a container for exercises, right? The playlist is a container for songs, right? The album is also a container for songs, but I don't consider a song a local object. A local object to me is where there is a high level of dependency on the host, right? On the parent. So this is like this really tight parent-child relationship where the child literally makes no sense at all outside of
Exactly.
the context of the host. Like a song outside the context of a playlist still makes sense. A song outside the context of a outside the context of an album makes sense. An exercise outside of the context of a workout still makes sense. I can just do lunges. It's not a workout. I just did some lunges while I was on the phone or something like that, right? So I can still just do an exercise. A recipe step. A recipe step, which
Makes
might
no
have
sense.
structure to it, does not make any sense outside of the context of a recipe. Like I can't just have a recipe step floating out there. A local object that I love is on TripAdvisor. You go to a tour on TripAdvisor and they have tour stops. And they actually integrate places on those tour stops, points of interest, right? But a tour stop out of context of the tour really doesn't make any sense. You can't rip it out. So that's why I call it a local object. It is so local, it only lives within that object. Doesn't that feel like something different? And is there a word for this in
Well, yeah, and
your
that's
world?
where they okay, so the relationship, there's two types of relationships, okay? Aggregation is basically the true hazard. It's loosely coupled, it has things, right? And the object that is contained within that can live and exist by itself. In composition, which is your local object, and I use hazard, but you probably should more correctly use part of,
Part of, yeah.
right? And that it exists in the life cycle of the parent object. So composition is a very tightly coupled relationship that the contained object lives and dies with its parents. So exactly what you're saying there. You know, if so in terms of the local object, the composition, and again, I don't know how strongly, that these are the terms, like you say, sometimes the terms get kind of misused. And it's funny, I've been using ChatGPT a lot recently. And sometimes, I'll say something and I go, wait a minute, are you sure? And he goes, no, you're right, it can be used differently. And it's like, okay, come on. So obviously it's finding references to both. But composition is the equivalent to the local object,
I
and
would
it
say that it's a type of composition, because I think you can have composition that is not a local object. There's different design patterns. Maybe in the development it would be very similar, but like you could, I wouldn't say that a comment is part of an article. Right? Like it's very dependent on the article, but it's not part of the article. Like in language, I would never say the comments on the article are part of the
No, you wouldn't.
article,
You wouldn't.
but they
But you
are
would say
dependent.
hazard,
If
right? You would say hazard.
I delete the article, I mean, I'm going to delete the comments too, likely. I wouldn't even
Yes,
see that
you
a
might.
review is part of a restaurant. I would say that a review is it just ha restaurant has reviews. And then even if I and if I delete, actually, if you close a restaurant on Yelp, the reviews still stay there. Right, because that's part of actually it's also has a parent creator of that review, right? So
Yeah, it depends on your, I guess it depends on your use case. Like, are you going to keep the reviews or not? If you say that the reviews are only going to exist within the context of what is being reviewed, then now it's a local object, right?
you
But
have
if you're not
composite.
going to delete it, then it isn't a local object.
You have composition with dependency and composition without dependency. And composition, composition without dependency is a bunch of songs in a playlist, right? Actually, the container, and I call that a container object, the container is actually more dependent on the stuff inside of it because the container without anything inside of it is useless. This is where I was like, and where I was getting in with people doing RoboCoach, where people wanted to eliminate the exercise but keep the workout because the workout was like bigger or something. It felt like a bigger thing. And I was using the metaphor of, well, would you rather have a handful of M&Ms or the bag of M&Ms without any M&Ms inside of it? Like, I would rather have the handful of M&Ms. I'd rather have the songs without the playlist than a playlist without songs. A workout without exercises is nothing. It's just, or the other one was a location, like a gym location and equipment. People wanted to keep the location because it was bigger, but get rid of the equipment object. And I was
Whereas
like,
that was an important piece. Yeah.
that's the important piece. A gym without equipment is just a room. It's nothing, right?
It's not a gym at that point,
It's
right?
not a gym anymore, but equipment without a room, like, okay, like I don't need to know what room, like that
You
still
don't need
works.
to know where it is. You just need to know you have access to it, right?
You have
Yeah.
access to it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, cool. So where does this leave us? Like, where, what do you think, what's your advice actually to me as far as language and labeling these things? What would you do if you were me trying to kind of get really clear on this language and muddling through all of this and figuring like, well, I like this term more, or this term feels more right with English language, but this isn't how developers use it. What would you do? What do you think I should do?
I am tempted to say, because you're trying to bring people in, you're going to want to use their language. Because if you use the language in a different way, they're going to go, oh, you don't understand us.
Yeah.
Right? So, in the sense of, even though it feels like inheritance that you're bringing values in, I wouldn't use it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I saw that as soon as I see this, I'm sitting there going, well, that's wrong. Now,
Right.
is it wrong? Well, it's wrong in the way we've used it. Now, do we use it wrongly ourselves in development? Maybe, but that's just the way we've used it. So, common usage is correct. That's how English language works, right? But coming up with your own terminology, it's like, okay, you've got this, there's something there with the pattern of the hierarchy. And being able to explain it and put words to it, because yeah, I wouldn't be able to put a term, but being able to put terms to it allows you to explain it and the OUXers to understand it. And you saw that, I saw that in the class where people are suddenly going, oh, wait a minute, I've got one of those, I've got one of these, oh, I've got a junction object over here. And then sometimes you're going, no, calm down, no, you don't, no, you don't,
Yeah.
junction object. But they're beginning to see that kind of thing out there, which is exciting. I think if you can find terms that describe it, that then you can, it's like it's like expanding upon.
Right. So
And
this is still
then you can bring
composition, but
in
these
people
are the
and say,
different.
yeah, because I think if you're describing it to a developer, you'll be able to get away with it because you can explain your understanding and where you're going with it. But a new OUXer suddenly going and saying, hey, I have these five things of inheritance. They're going, and then the developer's going to look, no, you don't. Like, oh, yes, I do. Like, oh, wait a minute. We're now you've already, you've diverged
Yeah.
as opposed to converged, right?
Right.
And that, and it's funny because I was, when I was looking through that piece on the course, the only thing that tied it to inheritance was the fact that they were all under the big title of inheritance, right? And then you had object base, and then you had junction object and everything else like that. It's almost like if you just pulled object base and inheritance down to here and had another, advanced relationships or whatever.
Yeah, just really focus on like the object bases. This is inheritance, and these other things are like advanced relationship types,
Exactly.
or these are, and I think for the OUXers out there to just really like be aware of that, especially if you've taken the master class and you're going around using, because we want to, it's like this is a tool to bring us closer to developers
Yeah.
and amongst other many other advantages, but like a tool to bring us closer. But if we start using the language incorrectly, then it can shut somebody down, and
Well,
they're just like,
then I
oh,
focused
well,
on
this
it. That's
is.
what I found. I focused on that and I was missing the message out in other places because I kept going back. No, that's wrong. That's wrong. It's like, and then eventually when I went back to it, it's like, okay, let me get over that. And now I can focus on the messages coming across. And I think you've probably seen that in other ways where, it's just people get diverted and then they don't really see what the real message is. So.
Exactly. And so like, and even like leveraging those terms to say like, this is, these are these two different types of composition. We have composition with dependency and composition without dependency. So it's kind of building on the existing.
Exactly.
terms. Yeah.
Exactly. And
Yeah.
clarifying the terms up front helps as well. Because,
It
I don't
does.
know how many people go into, it's like, until I did this OO UX course, I don't think I'd looked at my original textbooks or anything on OO. I mean, I've been doing OO for ages, but I don't look at there and think, oh, is this a composition or an aggregation? Who cares? You don't do that unless when you're teaching the basics of it, of course you do. But for the most part, I don't, when I draw a line between two objects, I don't think, is it? Now, obviously, the inheritance is an ISA relationship. So it's like that, those, the ISA and a HAZA are the two distinguishing the relationships to myself. But again, you really don't, it's obvious if you got inheritance, it's obvious, if you've got kind of like an aggregation or composition. What comes in is, am I deleting stuff? When do I delete stuff?
It
That's the
comes down
big.
to that dependency.
And I usually, we come to the point that we never delete anything. We usually, archive it. So we don't delete it. We mark it as hidden. So
Right.
a lot of times
And
things
it
come.
comes down to the user experience. Like, we have to have a reason. Like, there are reasons that identifying a tree system is like, oh, we want to, and I say this in the course, like, it's not important about knowing that this is a junction object or a tree system. Like, getting that right isn't what's important. It's making sure that you have the objects that you need, right? That you're not missing an object, or you're not confounding two objects together. You're not trying to make everything the movie object when you actually have a movie object, and you got a
Exactly.
theater object, and you got a Showtime object. And that's what I was struggling with. So that the reason, that's what I was struggling with early in my career, is I was trying to squeeze it all together, and it was creating all of these problems for me with the from documentation, from thinking about it. So just getting the objects right, and then eventually you'll have cool words like, oh, that's a tree system. And then you can think about things like roll-up data, which is a true design implication. Roll-up data, and also that con like with a tree system, with that content authoring, right? Like, who it gets back to permissions, like, who has access to the movie object? That's Hollywood has access to that, versus the Showtime object, which is like the 19-year-old theater manager has access to that. So, but the 19-year-old theater manager can't go and change out the
The
cover
movie.
image or the runtime of the movie, right? So it gets down to permissions and authoring.
And I think understanding, I mean, this is where patterns, I mean, patterns is a big thing in object-oriented world. But usually it's implementation. So it's taking a pattern and understanding something that's worked. And if you come across that instance again, instead of building it from scratch, you go, oh, this is how I do it. But and I see very much the same thing that you can start doing within the OUX is going, oh, wait a minute, I've seen this before. This feels like, a tree or a hierarchy, right? I wonder if it applies here. Or it's a junction object. I need a junction object here. Why? Well, the last time I had a one to many to many relationship, I needed a junction object. So, you can come up with a number of these patterns that will help other people to simplify their life, right? And I think, the more you do this, the more you're going to find that, oh, in this case, do this, it helps. Or it might help,
Oh my
right?
God, it's definitely a fractal. Like, the more you look at it, it's like, oh wow, okay, there's an explosion of these types of relationships, and that's why the R of Orca, it is the hardest part of the process. Like, Orca is hard work. It is hard work to do it. It's so fun, but it is difficult, and it is mind melting. But that R piece of starting to think about how these relationships work and how these hierarchies can work, and with a little bit of inheritance thrown in there sometimes. It's fun stuff, but it's that it this is like this is playing this is UX this is high fidelity UX, I feel like. Not high visual fidelity, but this is really getting to the heart of complexity, is in those relationships.
Yeah, if I'd realized that this was part of UX, I'd have gotten UX a long time ago. Because
It hasn't always been a part
you
of
saw my
UX.
sketches and things like that. I just can't design. But in terms of, breaking down the problem domain and things like that's the fun stuff. I know you enjoy that.
This
You
is
just
design, like, it's that's what Liam Gregg said from Atlassian on a previous but recent episode. He was saying like what he loved about OUX is that he, what the problem that he was dealing with is he was having his designers come to him was just showing screens, just or sketches even. And he was like, no, but I want the design before the design. Like, can you do the design? Like, what? I don't know how to articulate what that is, but do the design before the design.
Perfect.
And that's really what Orca is all about. It's the design before the design. It's still
It's
design
not,
though.
you're understanding the basics of it.
Yeah.
The essence that needs to be
Yeah.
there. So
Your squares were pretty bad though, I have to say. They
yeah,
were
I
pretty, yeah,
know.
they were bad. Your handwriting might be worse than mine.
I'm proud to say it
Yeah,
is.
doctor handwriting. It's but yes, it's like it's inverse with intelligence, right? Like the more
I don't know
intelligent
about
you
that. It's just
are,
bad.
the Richard, thank you so much for being on the podcast. We have gone way over. This is one of the longest ones we've had in a while. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your insights and your advice. And
Been a blast. Thank you, everything you've done, and I had fun on this course, so well worth it.
Cheers.
Thank
Awesome.
you, Sophia.
Thank you so much for listening. I truly hope you enjoyed this episode. Please visit objectorientux.com/podcast for show notes. Our soundtrack is Fighter by Ruby Vell, courtesy of Sugaroo Records. Happy OUXing!